This is the Goalkeeper Roundtable, hosted by Dr. Bill Steffen, with Jeff Shook, George Costellas, and Dave LaTourette. Welcome back to the Goalkeeper Roundtable. In episode 15, we continue our discussion with Dan Gaspar. So let's jump straight in with Dr. Bill, GK, Shooky, Lotto, and the Silver Fox.
Billy, I think Lotto's ready for the trends.
That's exactly what I'm ready for, man. And Dan, don't be afraid that you feel like you're going on a rant, but we have you here because of your experience and your expertise and the respect that we have for you.
Thank you.
So, and this goes back to our conversation, I think, probably in February. Talk about the trends in goalkeeping, and particularly, you know, there are good trends, but let's talk particularly about the trends that we collectively need to change. Mm-hmm.
You know, as we all agree, the goalkeeper now, especially with all the rules that are implemented and all to deter the movements and to make it more challenging for the goalkeepers, that they need to be field players. As an example, when someone tells me that they have aspirations of playing overseas, you know, and if they're not good with their feet and if they can't play, it's a waste of time to go overseas. And the reason is, before you even catch a ball, you're in a 4v2, you're in a 6v3, before you even get into goal. And if you can't earn the respect of the field players in terms of quick decisions and clean relationship with the ball, you're not even going to get into goal. They automatically discount you. So I think we really need, and we have been, you guys are the new generation. You know, I represent the old generation. I named some of the others that were part of that generation. And, you know, I think we had something to offer. I think we kicked it off, but it's you guys. It isn't me. It's you guys and those that are out there, you know, who are going to take the torch now and who have the responsibility to move this position to another level, including some of the issues that I've already discussed in terms of the level of respect and professionalism and providing the resources that we need so that we can dedicate, so you guys can dedicate your time exclusively to my mission in life has always been to create the best goalkeeper in the world. That's how I train. When I've been through all these teams, and oftentimes the reporters will ask, you know, who's the best in the world? And, you know, I wish I could take a piece of all of them and put it together and shape it and mold it and say that's the best in the world, because they're all great, but they all have some deficiencies. But in my mind, in my frame of mentality, it's the goalkeeper that I'm training at the moment is the best goalkeeper in the world. Because that's how I want them to think. That's what I want them to believe. And if I start naming everybody else, what am I doing to the goalkeeper that I'm training with every day? You know, and obviously the goalkeepers that I were blessed and fortunate to train with at the professional were all very good. You know, most of them part of national teams. But in any case, getting back to your question specifically, some of the concerns that I have is trying to transport goalkeeping skills outside of the 11v11 outdoor game. What do I mean by that? Ice hockey, futsal. Now there's this major movement with this K-stave, with this block save, you know, highlighted by David De Gea, you know. And the reason why I'm concerned about that, not that it doesn't have a place in our game, it does. It has to be the last, absolutely last resort and option. Okay. And the concern of I have as I go through my travels, I see young goalkeepers doing and taking that position in unnecessary circumstances. I'm talking about someone taking a shot from the 18 and the goalkeeper's already spreading himself wide, getting into a split. And when the distance and the pace and the circumstances don't warrant it, guys, futsal is futsal. The goal is much smaller. The ball is much smaller. The space that the goalkeeper has to react is much smaller. It's all about reaction. It's all about reflexes. So that particular save is useful. But too often times, I see it executed in matches and in training when it's not necessary. And there are several reasons for that. In my mind, in my opinion, and with all respect to those who teach that disproportionately. In other words, there's so much focus placed on that save percentage-wise that other important aspects are looked. What happened to the brave goalkeeper? What happened to that courageous goalkeeper? What happened to that goalkeeper who's organizing so that the team doesn't get into that situation? What's happening to hands to ball? What's happening making the body as long for as long as possible? What's happening when that save is executed and could potentially shift the momentum of the game in favor of your team? So I'm really extremely concerned about it. I think it's being overdone, overused, different than playing with your feet, getting the goalkeeper to develop their field skills, getting the goalkeeper more integrated and in synergy with the team right from the warm-up. All those kinds of trends that are becoming more and more beneficial and prevalent, I agree with that. But I have a hard time with this K-save. I mean, you allowed your box to be too congested. You allowed the player who's serving the ball not to have the pressure because of your lack of communication. You have to avoid that circumstances at all possible. And most of them, what do? They do the biggest sin that a goalkeeper can perform. They take their eyes off the ball. Their eyes are not on the magic ball. Their eyes are not on the most important object of the game. Because typically, just by instinct, what do? They turn their head. It's going this way, and they hope and they pray that it hits their toe, that it hits the chest, that it hits the eye, that it hits the chin. They're not putting any pressure on the ball. And so that's my humble opinion. That's based on my experience of years of being involved in developing and educating goalkeepers and coaches. And I hope that we begin to reflect. It might be too late. But I hope that we begin now to take a step back. And this is what I mean about getting your head out of the computer. You know, just because they're a professional goalkeeper doesn't mean they do everything correct. In fact, listen to what I said earlier. Our best goalkeeper coaches, in my opinion, are in this country. Our goalkeepers are far more technically refined because of our educational background than overseas. You see a number of professional goalkeepers who are technically not refined. Now, they have other aspects, physically, mental toughness, their decision-making, and that's all great. And that's what the other side will take. You know, we can reduce the emphasis on technique so long as they're effective in a game. Hey, how about not combining both? How about not developing their proper technique in their formal years of developing. So when they become professionals, they do become that role model. You know, the other thing that you see often is that, you know, when they go down for a low ball, I don't know if you guys see it, but they extend, let's say I go down to my right. I extend my right arm and then they leave the left arm like here. You know, they don't get two hands onto the ball and bring it in and collect it into being safe and secure and simple. They go, and that's because this is what they're seeing on social media. This is what they're seeing in international games. Doesn't mean that it's correct, but unfortunately it's getting copied. It isn't the kids' fault.
No, I think the majority of us agree here with that, Dan. And again, I would say part of it is our own fault and sense, because it becomes a gimmick, and I don't like that. To your last point, I'd agree. I was almost at one point going to say, yeah, whatever happened to catching?
Don't get me going, Bill. Bill, listen, we have lost the art of catching in this country. A good save is when the goalkeeper blocks a ball. You know, when a goalkeeper has the ball in his hands, they're better than Cristiano Ronaldo. They're better than Messi. They have more control. Nothing can happen. The game stops until the goalkeeper puts that in action. When a goalkeeper can be a one-touch goalkeeper, hold it and stay with it, it's magical. Now, I'm not saying that you catch every single ball. You don't. There's control catching where you don't hold on to it, but you knock it in front of you and you just go and collect it. But now it's amazing the amount of praise that's given for a good save just for keeping the ball out of the net. A good save is when a goalkeeper terminates the action and puts the ball back into possession for their team. You know, our goalkeepers are too rigid, are too stiff. They're built like walls. Walls give up rebounds. We have to be built like a net that's supple, that collects, that receives the ball, shapes the ball. Your body has to shape the ball. The ball to me is the money. My body is the wallet, and I put the money into the wallet and I secure it. You and I hold on to it. It's that precious. I tell young goalkeepers, if the ball was a baby, a child, and I threw this child in the air, would you do everything in your power to make sure you collected that baby and landed softly? Oh, absolutely. The ball's a baby. The ball's a baby. And again, there are shots with today's technology, with soccer balls at the very highest levels. I mean, obviously, if you're getting hit with a ball by Ronaldo, I mean, it's very difficult to hold on to. But the fear of making a mistake, my friends, is so great that they're content with just blocking the ball.
Yeah. Number of saves we see like this, and they're parrying it. They're parrying it like this. You have both hands there, hold it. George wanted to ask something. George.
Well, I love the point, and we recognize it, and I'm going to take you years earlier that they were talking to, there was an article by, that they interviewed Gigi Buffon, and he was mentioning that now the trend, as you've mentioned, there's so much more responsibilities on the goalkeepers, and he actually identified, like, you know, there's nobody that's a true specialist with their hands any longer. And I thought that was really profound coming from somebody that was still playing. And they were saying, like, what would be your suggestion to a young goalkeeper? He said, play another position. And I just found that really amusing, because he's just like, there's so much responsibility upon the goalkeepers now. So we're all recognizing it. Professional goalkeepers are recognizing it. I guess my question is, why isn't it changing? You know, we're noticing that these guys are no longer handling the ball well. Is it just what you were talking about? Is it the fear? Is it that it's just about keeping the ball out of there? I know a save is a save is a save, but, you know, we're talking about trying to be, I'm going to say perfectionist, but I think that is the mentality of a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
We're losing the art of a goalkeeper. We're losing the class, the elegance. You could take a good athlete, put him in goal, and keep the ball out of the net. I had one kid at University of Hartford, amazing athlete, and he would step in goal, and he would completely outperform me. Thankfully for me, he never wanted to be a goalkeeper. It isn't enough just to be a good athlete. It's the decision aspect. When do I come? Do I stay? Do I go? Do I catch? Do I box? How do I distribute? You know, what's the goalkeeping language? How do I control? How do I manage the players in front of me? I mean, George, it comes from the Federation. It comes from the top. It also comes from the goalkeeper educators and goalkeeper coaches to demand. When I train my goalkeepers, regardless if they're females or males or their age or skill level, I always start my sessions off with solid catching activities and have them develop a pride. With my dad, he taught me to volley the ball against a cement wall, and I would start off right foot, left foot, catch, catch, until I reached a point where I could volley the ball as hard as I could and I could hold it. And that gave me more confidence to do in a game. I would strike from the ground. I would half volley. I would throw it. Then I got to the next level of challenge, and I would go to a tree, and a tree is round, and you don't know where the ball is going to go. The wall gives you a true rebound. Now you work on your concentration of reactions, and it was just thousands and thousands of strikes to develop my hands. You know, the mind's eye needs to know what the size of a soccer ball. Ask your students to put up their hands and make the size of the ball. Most of them won't do it. Some of them are like this. Some of them are like this. Some of them are like this. They don't know instinctively what the size 4 or 5, depending on what their ages are. You know, I know it perfectly. Why? Because I've repeated the exercise so many times that it's just, it's instinctively to me. So we have to increase our standards as goalkeeper educators and coaches. We need to emphasize it more in our coaching courses. We need to have it. We need a blueprint that needs to come from the top of whatever organization that you're working for. If you're a goalkeeper, technical director of a club, you need to have in your philosophy the control and the managing of the ball. Just like any field player, the goalkeeper's success is the type of relationship they have with the ball. If they're only catching a few times, they cannot have a good relationship with the ball. If they're catching hundreds of times, different ways, you can use different tools. You can have balls with elastic bands to try to yank it. You can have weighted balls to develop the wrists and the fingers. And these tools and these gadgets are not the answers, but it changes the routine a little bit, and it still allows you to achieve the result that you want, and that's the mastery of the ball in extreme. So those are the, getting back to your question, Dave, those are my two biggest concern. This K-safe, this spreading wide, this lack of fear of attacking the ball and courage. And then secondly, the lost art of handling the ball. Now a good save is simply deflecting, punching, boxing. And yes, those skills are important, but they shouldn't be used for routine saves. We have to master the ball. We have to embrace the ball. You know, I mean, I try to make the ball so important to the keepers I train at all levels. You know, in 2010, when I was in the World Cup with Eduardo was our starting goalkeeper for the Portuguese national team. I don't know if guys you remember the, was it the Jubilaya ball? That
it's
was
a Jabalani.
Yeah.
Jabalani. Jabalani.
And that ball came out, and, you know, the field players loved it. It swerved all over the place. Every goalkeeper in the World Cup was discrediting the ball, complaining about the ball. And Eduardo and my other two goalkeepers, Beto and Daniel Fernandez at the time, I would not allow them to speak about the ball unless they said they love the ball. It's their best friend. Because we can only control what we can. And that ball was the match ball in the World Cup. And if you're angry at that ball, if you discredit the ball, if you don't believe in that ball, guess what? That ball's not going to treat you with respect. That ball isn't going to be handled by you. I'd have him sleep with the ball. I'd have him hug the ball. And you know what? Eduardo was voted the third best goalkeeper of that World Cup. Casillas was number one because we lost to the world champions in Spain. If we had won that quarterfinal game, Eduardo no doubt would have been. And he, the ball, in other words, we put together a mental program that the ball was no longer a distraction, you know? So these are the things. And, you know, you've heard me say this, and I believe in these principles and these values. And I'll ask goalkeepers, what's inside the soccer ball? What's inside the soccer ball? You know, and they'll all tell me, well, air, a bladder. No. It's your hopes, it's your dreams, it's your aspirations, it's your scholarship, it's fighting for your starting position, fighting and challenging to keep your starting position. It's all those things that you want out of this game. And when you prepare your goalkeeper mentally, and it's not easy, it takes time to live that, to experience that, they will treat the ball with more respect. In this country, this affluent country, and you guys know what I'm talking about, the ball gets kicked in the woods. Unless you tell the kid to go get it, he won't get it. Why? Because his parents are going to buy him another one. When I was in Portugal as a young boy growing up, we never lost a soccer ball. We knew we were not going to get another one. That's it. And the team that won that little small game, the captain of that little team took it home. That was his responsibility. The losers would go home and the winners would go to a coffee shop and celebrate and, you know, and trash us and all that kind of stuff. And those were the experiences going back to Carlos Queiroz, George. And the other impact was the Portuguese culture. I would go there during the summers. And, you know, back then there was no respect for the American soccer at that time. You know, it was a miracle that someone like myself, who was American born, who got into the international arena because I had somebody who believed in me and Carlos Queiroz. But we would clear the little patio, and you know what I'm talking about, and we play a small-sided game, not age specific. The two best players would pick their team. They would alternate. I was always the last one picked because I was the worst player. I came back home from that experience and I had pride and I was competitive and I didn't want to be embarrassed. I felt like I was representing my country. I felt like I was a US ambassador. And you know, my parents owned this fish market. There was two cemented walls. I played in a wall, come and receive, one touch, turn, just fantasizing to improve my skills. I'd go back every summer. Guess what? I got up the totem pole. I was no longer the last one. And one day I got to bring the ball home. So this is a kind of culture that I was developed in. George, and I know that you can relate as well, having a Greek background and how important this game was to your dad, God bless him, and to your brothers. And, you know, the hats off to the Costellas family because you guys were ahead of your times. In those days, how many had, you know, your family's passion, willing to sacrifice everything to support you guys so that you guys can succeed, right?
Absolutely.
It's great stuff. Great thoughts, Dan. Dave, you got a question, Lotto.
Yeah, Danny, this relates back to George's question about asking why things aren't changing. And it's a coaching or a teaching question. And I see this with younger, not just younger, I see this with goalkeeping coaches who will do a session. And I believe either they haven't been taught well or they're afraid to stop a session and teach because there has to be 10 reps or 40 seconds or a minute or a certain thing that needs to get done. And I'm working with a young coach now and I tell him, don't ever be afraid to stop a session to teach. And I'm not immune to going to YouTube and watching some coaches who put stuff up. And I either hear coaches talk too much, it's just gibberish that comes out of their mouth, for lack of better words.
Yeah.
Or everything's good, 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 well done, good, good. And I'm seeing things like, no, I would have stopped that 5 times already to make a teaching point. So can you speak to that in terms of teaching and correcting goalkeepers? Is I'm a bit of a perfectionist and like you, very technically driven.
Yeah, absolutely. This reminds me of my time that I worked in Japan for Grand Passe. And the reason why that popped into my mind was the Japanese, it was one of the best professional experiences that I had, because unlike most soccer opportunities at the professional level, what they promised, they kept. That doesn't happen often. And so I was in Japan and their discipline, their attention to detail is magnificent. The best in any soccer culture that I've ever worked. And I worked on 4 different continents to set up the activity, to time the activity, to put the cones in the right place, to put the, you know, the whatever training equipment that's necessary. Absolutely immaculate, perfection to the ultimate. But now once the activity began, they had no idea how to manage the activity. They had no idea or the confidence that if something needed to be corrected, you know, to pause, to freeze, make a coaching point, and then step out. So Dave, it's really crucially important, because if you're just setting up activities, then you're not an educator. You know, you have to understand when you design your activities, what's the purpose of this activity? What's my end result? What's the cause and effect of this activity? The goalkeepers reflect your attitude and your philosophy. If you're on time, if you're a professional, if you have various activities to meet the same goals, which means you're really thinking and trying to introduce to keep them stimulated. You know, routine leads to boredom. You know, if they see that, if they know that you're there for them and not for selfish reasons, they reflect that same attitude. Opposite is true. If you're just arriving on time, my philosophy is early on time. You know, I want to set up my arena so as they're walking to the arena, they're wondering, first of all, what's going to happen, but they see a level of professionalism that hopefully that they reflect when they arrive. They know I mean business. You know, not that I take the joy and fun. I mean, geez, anybody that works with me know that I like to keep it dynamic and keep it moving and et cetera. So for the young coaches out there, don't lose your personality. Don't try to copy somebody else's personality. Yes, search and learn from activities that have been, there's no secrets. There's no shortcuts to success. You got to put in the work. You got to be passionate about what you do. You got to love what you do. You have to care about what you do and care about the goalkeepers you're training, because your impact is everlasting. You don't realize until you get my age and older the difference you've made in people's lives. You don't. And that is amazing. I know when I was a head coach at University of Hartford, I'd ask the player, who impacted your life the most? And most of them go back to their youth development coaches. You know, so we have an awesome responsibility. You know, parents are entrusting their athlete in our hands, and we have to be extremely humble and grateful for that opportunity, and knowing that everything that you say and the way that you behave, especially in these sensitive times that we live in, you want to treat those athletes as if they're your own. When I train goalkeepers privately, it isn't just what's happening on the field. I want to know how they're doing in school. I want to know how the family situation is. I want to know what their hobbies are. I want to know, why do they choose to be a goalkeeper? What do they like most about goalkeeper? What do they feel are their major strengths? Are their major challenges? Who are going to be the feedback people, both the ones who love them and the professionals, because both of those sides need to be involved in their development and their process. You need to put together a plan. You need to put together short-term and long-term goals. You need to understand what the mission is, and you go for it. And, you know, it's always dynamic. It's always changing. The one thing we can't do as coaches is lose a player or a goalkeeper to potentially being a spectator, to potentially being a parent of a soccer player or a referee or an administrator. That's sinful. We can't make, I want to be a tool of torture. Excuse me. I want to be a tool that makes it happy, that a challenge them. I don't want to be a tool that's going to make it miserable for them. And that's so important. You know, again, how many are going to be making a living off of this position? You know, but what we have to do is develop the character as well. So it's overwhelming. It's a lot of responsibilities, but, you know, that's the career that I've chosen to do. And I'm assuming you guys as well.
Yeah, I think it's key. I mean, you use the word responsibility, but I also think it's an opportunity. How many people can have an impact? Such an impact on young people's lives. So I think that's a tremendous opportunity as well as a responsibility. Lotto.
Yeah, just I want to take a couple of points that Danny made and a point George made. George texted in that message about relationships. And Danny, you talked about not losing your personality, but you also talked earlier about if you can make the perfect goalkeeper, you'd take a little bit from here and a little bit from there and a little bit from the other guy, and you'd have the world's best goalkeeper. And I think from an educating side, from a teaching standpoint, if we want to be better, as we get better as coaches, we do the same thing. When I think back about me, you know, I am a little bit Bill Steffen. I'm a very little bit Bill. I'm a little bit Bill Steffen. I'm a little bit Tony DiCicco. I'm a little bit Kim Wyant. You know, I'm a little bit Sasha Sarofsky, Austin Daniels, Janet Rayfield, and, you know, and Steve Swanson. And these are the people that continue to mold me. You know, and even now, even though I coach George, I've started to become a little bit George Costellos, but I have hair. I'm a little bit Jeff Shook, but I'm 6 inches shorter. Those kind of things. And as coaches, if that process stops at some point, we need to tap out. And I appreciate you coming on, because now I'm even more a little bit Dan Gaspar too. And I appreciate that.
George, you got something.
Danny, I'm gonna bring you back to an event, and I'm hoping you've had a chance to work with them, because I thought it was fascinating. It brings me to Ricardo when he took off his gloves during the PK shootout. I was absolutely astonished as a goalkeeper at that time to see a goalkeeper on a number of occasions go in the same direction of the ball and literally just, I mean, he was on that ball, you know, and at that time, I think, you know, I mean, everybody knows as a goalkeeper that, you know, getting to a ball in a PK is incredible. You save one, you've done your job. You save two, whoa. And you save three, they bill you the monument. And, you know, Ricardo in that time, I mean, he had such a jump. So I was wondering if you could give us some insight. Did you ever talk to him about that? Did you help train that?
Dan, can you unmute? I'm sorry, I muted you because there was a little bit of feedback. Just unmute yourself, please.
You're muted, Dan. Text them, guys.
Yeah, George, that brings back a wonderful memory. I had the opportunity and was very grateful to train Ricardo. Great human being. What most people don't know is Ricardo's an outstanding field player. Could be a professional field player on the pitch. And I think that knowledge and that experience allowed him to be so effective in saving penalty kicks. His reaction time, his reflexes was just microseconds. Incredible. And his work ethic as well. As we know, penalty kicks is an opportunity for a goalkeeper to be a hero. In most cases, the opposition is already celebrating before the penalty kick is even taken. It's a psychological warfare. You know, the worst thing a goalkeeper can do is just make it routine for the field player. And how does a penalty kicker take their penalty kicks in training? Bunch of balls, put it down, take their ritual to strike the ball, and they strike it. As a goalkeeper, we want to take him out or her out of that ritual, out of that routine. And how do we do that? Well, in Ricardo's case, he took his gloves off, something that no one has ever done. He took the field player out of his routine at that moment. Anytime you can delay as much time as you can, do it, because it allows the field player to think about it. The approach of the player. If it's an odd approach, a deep arc or a long run, generally speaking, they're going to go against their natural swing because they're going to have the time and space to turn their hips. If it's a natural approach to the ball, then more than likely it's going to go towards their natural swing. And again, if I had the secrets of saving penalty kicks, I probably wouldn't be on this podcast right now. It would be so valuable. But these are just standard information that I'd like to share with a goalkeeper. And that was a great moment for me, because Ricardo was referred to as the Matrix goalkeeper, you know, a guy who's flying all over the place. He wasn't that big. Ricardo's 5'11", but very light. But he played bigger than his size and his reading. When you're a smaller goalkeeper than the traditional size of a goalkeeper in today's day and age, you have to be a master of all the skills, you know, and there's an exception to all the rules, you know, and we have examples of that, you know, John Bush, Nick Raimundo are two good examples of how they had outstanding careers, over 400 games in their career in their MLS, and were able to overcome that initial detriment of presence. Now, I have to also say, if you have a big goalkeeper who moves like a small goalkeeper, then you have something special. But that's rare to find. The goalkeeper that I train in Iran, who saved the goalkeeper for Ronaldo, the best athlete I've ever trained, this guy was 6'5", but he moved like a 5'6". Incredible. His His speed of footwork, his range, his extension, he was tall but slender. His range was unlimited. It was just amazing, you know? So thanks for reminding me of that moment, George. It was a great moment. And, you know, there was a lot of English spectators who were very, very discouraged. And on top of that, what did he do? He took his own penalty kick and won it. He saved the penalty kick. Came back, and then for you know, adding to the insult, he scored the penalty kick to win it.
Great stuff, Dan. Well, we've taken you well past our time, but we appreciate your time. It's just been great for us to sit here and hear your thoughts, especially as they relate to kind of the very big picture for U.S. goalkeeping. I think that's important. You know, we want to continue to develop U.S. goalkeepers, as you stressed. And we want to be better at it, return maybe to that golden age that you described. And I think that's probably, you know, you've given us some good foundations to try and build upon that. Fellas, anything else to add as we
let Dan go? Thank you for being on here, and thank you for being so frank and honest. It's truly refreshing to hear someone come out and speak with that candidness, just to come out there and no holds barred and let everybody hear what has to be done. It's great.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Jeff. You know, again, when you're at the stage of my career and you have, you know, all this silver hair, I don't know why it's silver. We have all this silver hair. I respect the younger goalkeepers. I was in their position where I had a lot of beliefs that were contrary to the system. And you know what? I just went on, did my job, and, you know, and try to be politically correct and try to get my and I did have many opportunities. I'm grateful for the organizations in this country who gave me, you know, opportunities that and memories that will last a lifetime. But once again, I cannot continue to not share my frustration, and it won't make a difference. It probably won't, because I'm not in charge, and I just am extremely disappointed and don't understand why this important position has been abandoned. I mean, Peter Mellor was one of the first, along with the support of Phil Whedon, you know, to get something going, and they did an admirable job. But since that they've left, I don't think anything has been addressed to the same level and commitment that they have. So it's a mystery, guys. And I think the only way we can resolve it, if we truly, as a goalkeeper universe, join hands and see how we can address this issue in a professional manner and in the best interest of not us, but really the development of goalkeepers. We got to get back to having American goalkeepers on a world stage and being compared to the best in the world.
Yeah, no, I very much agree. That would be what we're looking for, is when you know, overseas organizations come to the U.S. to scout goalkeeping and to see, okay, what are those Americans doing? Because they're producing goalkeepers. That's what we aspire to.
And we know why. I mean, we have great athletes, good hand-eye ball coordination. They played multi-sports, and which I encourage, by the way, guys. I mean, I love it when I'm training a goalkeeper and I ask them, hey, do you play other sports? In particular, when they tell me they play basketball, I'm really keen on that.
Yeah, no, actually, we discussed sports sampling. And I've done, as kind of in my role, I had done a lot of research and investigating in sports sampling and the benefits of that. George, you had something?
No, not a question. Just Danny, just wanted to make sure I get my two cents. And I mean, being a Connecticut guy, watching you throughout your career and grow, nothing but respect and admiration. And for you to come on here and share a wealth of knowledge with us, man, this has just been fantastic. So thank you for myself. And obviously, I know the guys feel the same way. So
thanks. Very much so.
Dan, just again, thank you. Probably doesn't say enough. I'm glad you came on to the platform, and hopefully, you know, I know George and myself and Billy have tried to carry on the legacy of Tony, and hearing your thoughts, we're going to try to do the same for you as well. yourself and Tony and Joe Matchnick, go Connecticut, first of all. I want to say the godfathers of goalkeeping. So, and the last thing too is that everybody here has a nickname, and usually we give a nickname to all of our goalkeepers that come on. So when we do our introduction, you are now the Silver Fox.
Here we go. I love it. I love it.
Great.
Dom Danny. Dom Danny.
Dan, again, as I'll just echo what's been expressed earlier, we appreciate your time and your thoughts. And again, your background, people need to take your words seriously and to consider those words, take them very seriously as we look forward to developing the game, not just goalkeeping, but the game, because goalkeeping is an important facet of that. So great. We appreciate the time.
Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate the invitation. As I started off with this podcast, I have the most respect and admiration for all of you. And, you know, the more we share, the more we all grow, the more we learn. I don't profess to have all the answers. Certainly I don't. And I don't think anyone does. I think we can all continue to learn from each other and develop the art of goalkeeping and really make a difference in the goalkeeper universe.
Yeah. And hey, and have fun at Star Goalkeeping. I know camps, you'll have fun as well as your kids will have fun. So enjoy it. Enjoy it.
Thank you so much, guys. Thank you so much.
All right.
Keep up the good work. Keep up the good work.
We hope you enjoyed that episode at the Goalkeeper Roundtable. If you'd like to reach out with suggestions, comments, or questions, all of our email addresses are available in the show description. If you like the show, we'd love for you to subscribe to it, but also share it in social media platforms or with any other goalkeeper or coach who may find value in it. We hope you turn in to the next Goalkeeper Roundtable.